We are now recording.
All right. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum as-salam.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. So I'll jump right in.
Hawk, would you allow me to introduce you to the group? I'm not sure that we have some new people here that might not have met you. And I'd love to just tell them a little bit about you before you get started, if that's okay.
Sounds good.
And then I'll let you begin us in whatever manner you would like. Abdul-Haq, Dr. Alan Abdul-Haq Godless, is someone who has taught around the country at our Sufi gatherings for many years. He's been a joyful, loving, familiar face to us for quite some time. He's been a student of Sidi. And Abdul-Haq, his name means servant of the truth. And before I actually read a little bit of his bio, I just want to share with you one of the many reasons why I'm so excited to have Dr. Godless with us this evening. I think the main reason is because you will notice his smile it just radiates love and joy. And when he speaks, it's as if his entire heart is got a huge smile and radiating love and joy through every part of his being as he delivers these teachings. And my impression of him as he teaches is that he is a person who is so in love with the truth that his love for the teachings is just, it radiates and permeates into every cell. And that joy that he carries, that he exudes as he teaches, is courageous. I mean, courageous, it's contagious. And I feel it whenever I am in his presence. So I feel quite blessed to be in his presence when he teaches as a student of his, in every chance I get, because it just goes in. You know, when your body is happy and all of your cells get happy, they just drink it in, and it's very nice. So that said, Dr. Alan Abdul-Haq Godless, PhD, is authorized to teach the Sufi contemplative practice in the Shadili tradition of Sidi Sheikh Muhammad al-Jamal of Jerusalem. That's our guide of the University of Spiritual Healing and Sufism, and of the Naqshbandi tradition of Hazrat Ibrahim Jan of Kokand, Uzbekistan. He has been practicing both American and traditional Islamic forms of Sufism since 1973, first initiated into Sufism in the Chishti tradition of Hazrat Inayat Khan through the lineage of Murshid Sam Lewis. Dr. Godless subsequently encountered the Naqshbandi Shatari Sufi way as taught by Idris Shah through study under Dr. Claudio Naranjo. From 1974 to 1977, he lived and practiced in the Nimatullahi Sufi Center in Tehran. Dr. Godless received his PhD, concentrating in Islamic studies and Sufism, from the University of California in Berkeley in 1991, and began teaching as a professor of religion, Islamic studies, and Arabic at the University of Georgia. In addition to teaching at numerous Sufi and Islamic venues, he has taught and lectured about contemplative Sufi practice at the Sivananda Yoga Ashram in the Bahamas, as well as the Tibetan Buddhist Mangalam Center in Berkeley. And Abdul-Haq, you're welcome to correct any of my pronunciations on this if I misspeak. His current research investigates resources of the world's religions, in particular Islam, for enhancing emotional intelligence. As a part of his work, Dr. Godless became authorized to test emotional intelligence by David Caruso of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. He has delivered scholarly papers about Sufism in 14 countries, including Turkey, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Iran, Egypt, and Morocco. Dr. Godless' website, Sufism, Sufis, and the Sufi Orders, Sufism's Many Paths is the leading comprehensive academic website for Sufism. Dr. Godless, thank you so much for giving us your time and sharing your wisdom and your beautiful heart with us this evening.
Thank you for that amazing introduction. And I really, when you said courageous, I thought, well, it seems to my brief understanding, insignificant understanding of etymology, that the root of courageous is cœur, in French, for heart. So you were on the right track. That was what you were talking about, was the heart. And alhamdulillah, thank you so much for that introduction.
Alhamdulillah, thank you.
You're welcome. So let's start. Today I want to talk about the beginning of Rumi's Masnavi, his preface to the Masnavi. And I meant to check with you to see if any of your other speakers had already talked about that, but I figured even if they did, it certainly, the poem bears repeating, and I suspect what I have to say will be different from what anybody else says as well. So, at least to a certain degree. So, Rumi begins his Masnavi with without even saying Bismillah Rahman Rahim, but he starts out with the Persian word Bishnu, which means listen. And that begins with the ba, just like the Bismillah Rahman Rahim begins with the ba. So commentators have actually said that even though he doesn't begin his great teaching work, the Masnavi, with Bismillah Rahman Rahim, in effect, that's what the Bishnu, beginning with the B, refers one to, and it resonates certainly with Bismillah Rahman Rahim. And certainly for anyone familiar with the Hebrew Bible and the Jewish tradition, the Jewish equivalent of La ilaha illallah in the sense of it's the importance for the Jewish faith, Shema Yisrael, listen, O people of Israel. So this is a very important, he directs us to listen. And I just got a message that my internet connection is unstable, and so I can't see you. I don't know if you can see and hear me. So I'll stop for a second to get that feedback.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much unless you got blocked totally, but we can see and hear you just fine. There might be a couple of moments like that you might receive that message, but unless it gets dire, I think you're okay to proceed.
Okay, so just let me know if I lose you, let me know somehow. Maybe I should get my phone so that if I lose you, you can call me so that I'm not droning on and on without any audience. Should I do that?
Master, does that sound all right to you?
Yeah, that sounds good. When I saw your connection was weak, that's why I cut my video so that it would somehow help if that's possible. So I just want to let you know that's why I did that. But if you want to, I'm not sure that I have your phone number. Is it in your email? Or if not, you can tell it to me and I can call you just in case.
Yeah, it's 706-202-9996.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm closing some open files. Do you think that might improve the situation?
One note, I am going to pause the recording 1 second so I can talk to you.
Which are the Sufis connected to the order that Rumi established. This whirling, the word for this is Sama, which means literally hearing. Mm. Although it's the Arabic word, it's an Arabic word, sama', and the equivalent, isma', in Arabic, is the Arabic translation of the word Bishnu, meaning listen, which is how the Masnavi, Rumi's great didactic teaching magnum opus, his greatest work, which is how it begins. So he starts out, listen, listen to the reed, how it complains, telling a tale of separations. And so the reed, which he asks us to listen to, this is, has a couple of different meanings. One of the meanings is the actual reed flute, which came to be an essential part of the primary ritual of whirling of the Mevlevis. And certainly it's a very important part of Turkish and Persian traditional music. So on the one hand, he tells us to listen to this reed flute, and he will talk about the reed metaphorically in the next few lines of poetry. But also he's asking us to listen to the voice deep within our souls, the voice of our soul. And so the reed here is a metaphor for your own soul that speaks through your heart and speaks to your heart, if we can listen. So take a second and listen. Listen to the voice of your soul as it cries out to your heart. And then you'll be following Rumi's instructions to listen to this reed, how it complains, telling a tale of separations. So just take a second and listen to your soul. Listen to the pain, the different kinds of pains of the many separations that you've had so far. He then continues. The reed says, ever since I was parted from the reed bed, man and woman have moaned in unison with my lament. And the Persian for this is Bishnu azne chun hekayat mikunad, or Bishnu ine chun shekayat mikunad, as judai ha hekayat mikunad, as neestan ta mara bobride and as nafiram marduzan na lide and. Ever since I was parted from the reed bed, men and women have been moaning in unison with my lament. Or we could also read this, men and women have been moaning because of my lament. One of the things that this calls to mind is commonly as we live our lives in the world, we experience the ups and downs, the hopes of our lives, the successes and the failures. And we attribute our discomfort when we experience these failures. We attribute this discomfort to lack of success at having achieved our hopes. When in fact, each of the failures that we experience in our lives is a small taste of the separation that our soul experiences at each moment, the separation from infinite love, the infinite oceanic love and reality of Allah. So we have this taste, we have this memory, this deep-seated memory of the days of union, the days when the reed, the bamboo reed, was still connected to the reed bed. We have this memory of what that union was like, the memory of our union, the beloved, the infinite. At the same time, when our consciousness came into being with our separate self, the reed of our soul was cut. The reed of our consciousness was cut in a certain way from the reed bed. Fortunately, deep down we're still connected, but our consciousness feels a gap, feels the separation. And this gap, this separation between the union that we know, the union of the reed in the reed bed, the union of the lover with the beloved, the union of our soul with the infinite oceanic reality of Allah's love. We know this union, and at the same time, we experience a kind of discrepancy, a separation from that union. Even if we're not conscious of the union, the feeling that there's something wrong ultimately goes back to this unconscious, our unconscious awareness that of what we could have and deep down what we do have, namely the awareness of union with the infinite. So we're aware of this difference, even unconsciously, between our union with the beloved and our conscious disconnection or separation. But we haven't, most of us didn't never learn to frame that separation, to frame our discomfort as separation from the beloved. Instead, we've spent our lives gripped by various narratives. I'm upset because I didn't get this particular job that I wanted, or because this relationship broke up, or because this person became the president instead of the one I wanted. Things like this, where we're constantly blaming we're framing our separation as in terms of worldly situation. So Rumi says, he gives us a way to reframe our everyday disappointments, our separations in the world. He gives us a way to frame that in a way that can heal our consciousness and heal our hearts and reorient us back to what the ultimate cause of the separation is, and how to consciously come back to that union. So he says, ever since I was parted from the reed bed, men and women have been moaning with my lament. And actually, I think what I'd like to do is to take questions if they occur to you, if that's all right, if that works well in this format, I suspect there may be lots of questions, and unless I take them line by line, I'm concerned that there may be a lot of misunderstanding that go unmet. So does anyone have any questions so far?
If anybody has a question, please feel free to raise your hand. You can do that by going to the participants box and then the raise hand button. Or if you're dialing it by phone, it is star 9.
Yeah. If somebody does raise a hand, will there be will something actually, if somebody can just don't have a question, use that and we'll see what happens.
So when they raise their hand, I get to see it and I call on them. And Mastura has raised her hand, so I'm going to unmute you now.
Oh, I see. So I don't have to do anything. You'll do all that work.
Indeed.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mastura.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum. So Rumi's Masnavi, you mentioned that this was his greatest work, his magnum opus. Some of the others have actually, they've taught some pieces, not this. This is his, they haven't taught this one, so this is good. Nobody's really given that, I don't think anybody has really given that foundation of what exactly this work of art means, the significance of it. Would you mind saying a word about that? And then and I just wanted to ask the very beginning of it.
Yes, the first there was a couple of like a word or two that I missed in what you said, so I'll rephrase what I think you said just to make sure. So you'd like me to give you some background as to the significance of his Masnavi as a work of art?
Yes, just like a general overview of the significance of it, of what this piece of work is and what it means.
All right. The Masnavi is, first of all, it's an enormous work. I'll show it to you. It's this thick.
Wow.
Can everybody see that?
Lift it up just a little bit, if you would. Yeah, that's.
Here's my hand. Okay. And so.
Alhamdulillah. And it looks like that is actually in his original Persian language.
Yeah.
Open that up. Okay.
And,
that's not the little quotes we're used to seeing flying around on Facebook.
This is an enormous book that has traditionally been referred to as the Quran in the Persian language. It's that important. It's that enormous, and it's comprehensive. It deals with so many aspects of following Islam, following the path to God, following the Sufi way, enabling people from many different backgrounds and stations and states and circumstances to approach the center from wherever they are on the circumference. And it's called a didactic work in that it's designed to teach. It has a preface, which is what I'm reading from and what I'll be commenting on. And then the rest consists of many, many stories connected to his comments, both about the meaning of the stories, comments, they include Quranic verses, hadith. So he weaves together many sources that are important to Muslims traditionally, and deals with the inner dimension, the spiritual dimension of those various sources, Quranic verses and hadith, and in a way that because he weaves them into stories, they're very accessible to people. So he'll introduce a story, he'll give you the story, in the midst of the story, he'll make certain metaphysical, spiritual, or psychological asides, and then at the end, he'll often tell you the moral of the story. So it's really a work that's designed to teach how to follow the spiritual path. And just for those who don't have any background, Rumi, basically he was born in the region of Afghanistan or Tajikistan. And then in a very young age, because the Mongols were sweeping across Central Asia, Rumi and his family fled. They were refugees. They fled, eventually settling in Turkey. So I suspect that if there's a Rumi around today as a refugee someplace, he wouldn't be able to get into the United States during the next 4 years. So, but in those days there was no wall separating Turkey from the rest of the world. So he was able to go into Turkey, eventually settling in Konya, where because his father was a Sufi, his father had trained him in Sufism. So he was trained not only in Sufism, but in the traditional Islamic fields of study in Quran and Hadith. And so he was well respected by the time he became a young man. He was well respected as an Islamic teacher as well as a Sufi. And then at a certain point when he met Shamsi Tabrizi, who really catalyzed him into the ocean of love. And out of that experience came his Masnavi, this enormous volume that I showed you, as well as his ecstatic poetry, which is called the Divan-e Shamsi Tabrizi, which is about the same size as the Masnavi. So also the Masnavi is written in rhymed couplets. So every line consists of a hemistich, and each of those rhyme with each other. And furthermore, the whole poem, the whole book is written in the same rhyme scheme, which is something like dun ta dun 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 ta dun 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 ta dun dun ta dun 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 ta dun 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 ta dun. Actually, it's not something like it. That is the rhyme scheme. Dun ta dun dun. So everybody who's listening, you might want to do that just to get it. Dun ta dun 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 ta dun 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 ta dun. Dun ta dun 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 ta dun 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 ta dun. Bishnu hazne or Bishnuine chun hikayat mikunad az judayi ha shikayat mikunad kazne estan ta mara bobride an az nafiram marduzan nadide. So that's now, and this is certainly one of the greatest works. Even if we put aside all Sufi meaning, it's one of the greatest works of Persian literature, of world literature. So I think that's probably a good answer for me.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you so much.
Okay. Next we have Mutmina, who has a question. Mutmina, I'm going to unmute you now.
Yes, what I was understanding then is that all our longing and sense of separation is really longing for Allah. Is that what you're essentially
That's
saying?
Right. At the root,
our unconscious feels that separation, and we yearn for Allah. Thank you.
That's right. We're in all of our yearnings at root is yearning for Allah. And so it's, on the one hand, there are certain yearnings in the world which are healthy for us and which can lead us, even though we're focused on a particular object in the world or a person or goal, that yearning for that goal can be healthy and can lead us, can reinforce our love for our beloved and lead us back to love of Allah. On the other hand, there are other yearnings which are more difficult. They're easier to get lost in. They can, even yearnings that in which we can easily get lost and stuck, even those yearnings can awaken yearning for Allah. It's just that it's harder with certain kinds of yearnings. It's harder to move from those yearnings to Allah, and it's more difficult to use those yearnings to reinforce our love for Allah. And that's why, for example, the Sufis are very often traditionally would say that love, human love, is a bridge to the divine. Al-majaz qantaratul haqiqa. So, yeah. So one should be cautious when one is pursuing one's other loves and constantly be checking to make sure that one isn't getting stuck and losing sight of the big picture of our true love.
Yes. Yeah. I see. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Halima asked a question through chat, and maybe you can answer this. She wanted to know, are these the same stories that are in the book, The Illustrative Rumi, A Treasury Of, by Philip Dunn, forward by Houston Smith? Are you familiar with that book?
I'm not familiar with that book, but I suspect they are, because it's possible some of those stories might come from Rumi's other work, Fihi Ma Fi. He has a prose work, but I suspect most of them come from the Masnavi. His other work, by the way, Fihi Ma Fi, there are two good translations. One was by Arbery, the other one, more recent, was by Thaxton. And literally it translates as "in it, what is in it," but the title of it was Fihi Ma Fi. Any other questions?
If anybody else has a question, if you could raise your hand or put it into the chat box. To raise your hand, you should select participants and in the window that pops up. As how do you spell Thaxton?
Thaxton.
You got it, Mutmina. She spelled it right in her question. Her instinct was on.
And the translation that I gave in the handout is not my translation. It's Nicholson's translation, which is a scholarly but somewhat Victorian style translation. Nicholson was a Victorian gentleman who was trained in the early part of the 20th century. Yes.
And as of right now, I do not see any more hands raised, and it looks like the chat may be satisfied for the moment. So if you'd like to continue.
Okay, great. So just to recap, the lines that we've read so far are Bishnui ne chun shikayat mikunad az judai ha hikayat mikunad az neyestan ta mara bobride and az nafiram mardo zan nalide and. Then he takes us in a very physical direction, and he says, I want that I may unfold to such a one the pain of love desire. We can say also, I want a chest, sinechaham sharhe az farag. So what we translate in the poem, what Nicholson translated as severance, is a very intense expression, torn by severance. In Persian, the word that Nicholson translates as torn is sharhe sharhe. It's a repetition of a word that perhaps literally we could translate it as deeply sliced. I want a chest that has been ripped apart, deeply sliced by separation or severance, so that I may unfold to such a one the pain of love's desire, the pain of love desire. Si nechoham sharhe sharhe az farag ta beguyam sharhe darde ishtiyaq, so that I can explain the pain of yearning. So the key to being receptive to what Rumi is saying is that you yourselves have to be in touch with, be willing to be in touch with your own pain. This is the key. If to whatever degree you are in touch with your own pain of separation, whether it's a conscious pain of separation from God, or even if it's the pain of between you and the pain that you experienced when at a breakup of a recent relationship, the death of a loved one, the death of a pet, any kind of separation, to whatever degree you're in touch with that, this will help you to receive the message that Rumi is attempting to communicate. That's what he means in this line. He needs a chest. He needs someone who has a heart that has been wounded, a heart that has been wounded, so that such a person can be receptive to what he's going to say about the pain of yearning, the pain of yearning to return to the beloved. Any questions about that?
Anybody with a question, feel free to raise your hand, *9, or the participants and then raise hand button. Or you can enter it in chat as well.
Okay. Shall I go on?
You shall go on. Master has said she's just feeling the exquisiteness of it.
All right. So the next line is, everyone who is left far from his or her source wishes back the time when he was united with it. Har kesi ku dur mand az aslechish baz juyad ruzegare vaslechish. Har kesi ku dur mand, whoever has remained separate from his or her origin, baz juyad ruzegare vaslechish, once again will seek the times, will seek days when they are in union. So the fact is that our consciousness being a separate human being, that the discrepancy between that separateness and our original union, both before we came into being as an individual person, as well as at this moment when our consciousness unconsciously separates from the beloved, this discrepancy between our ordinary consciousness of our individuality and union with the beloved, this will cause us to want to return to this union. And one of the things that this implies is the Sufi and Islamic perspective that right now, like before we were, before we came into being, before we were created, right now we are in union with the beloved, but we lose that union in a split second, faster than you can be aware of it. And so at each moment, unconsciously, we let that love slip away and we find ourselves in separation. So this, it's not only that you're separate from the union that you had before you were born, but you separate from the union at each instant. And that also, separating at each instant, causes this sense of discomfort that motivates us to return to the union. And so to repeat, he says, everyone who is left far from his source wishes back the times when he or she was united with it. One of the interesting things about Persian in general is that Persian does not differentiate between he and she. Persian has one pronoun that's non-gendered. So this is why Nicholson himself uses he, but while it's certainly free, we're certainly free to say he or she, because Persian itself does not differentiate between the genders. Doesn't even have a pronoun that distinguishes the two. Any questions about that line?
Feel free to raise your hand or enter a question into the chat box if you have one.
So, and stop me if a question does come up. So man bahar, the next line is man bahar jamiyati nalan shodam juft khush halan o bad halan shodam. Nicholson writes, in every company I uttered my wailful notes. And again, keep in mind, this is the nay, the reed, the soul that is speaking here. In every company, I uttered my wailful notes. I consorted with the unhappy and with them that rejoice. So, man bahar jamiyati nalan shodam. The human soul speaks to everyone, just like the nay. You're in a gathering and you're hearing someone playing this this Turco-Persian reed flute, doesn't distinguish between those who are having whose state is good and whose state is bad, whose state is happy and whose state is uncomfortable. Everyone hears that, just like the human soul cries out to everyone. Now, not everyone listens, but the nay is singing its music. The soul is singing its music, calling out to every person, irrespective of the quality of their consciousness, irrespective of their state, whether they're hosh halon, whether their state is joyful or bad halon, uncomfortable. He continues, هر کسی که زن خود شد یار من از درون من نجست اسرار من. Everyone became my friend from his own opinion. None sought out my secrets from within me, meaning that the ney is singing, the reed flute, the ney is the Persian word for reed flute, the ney is singing from the center of the circle. We're on the periphery, listening to the voice, to the call to return to the center, to return to union. And everybody on the periphery hears that call in a different way. And this is what he means by everyone became my friend from his own opinion. None sought out my secrets from within me. So we start out in our consciousness of separation, and each of us hears the call in a different way. It's distorted in a slightly different way. And that's just the way that things are. As we move closer to the center, we begin to hear the call of the soul more fully, specifically unique to each one of us in a different way. Sirriman az nauleyman dur nist. Sirriman az nauleyman dur nist. Lik cheshm o gush ra dide jan. Lik cheshm o gush ra on nur nist. Lik cheshm o gush ra on nur nist. He says, my secret, on the one hand, no one has sought the secret, the true reality of the call of the ney. No one has sought this, the secret, the true reality of the call of union from union itself. But that truth, that secret of the call of union and the reality of unity is embedded in however we hear it. So he says, my secret, Sirriman az nauleyman dur nist. My secret is not separate from my wailing. So when you listen to your own soul through your heart, when you listen to that and the pain that you experience, when we listen to that pain, in that pain, even if it's in our mind, the pain of, as I mentioned, the pain of the separation from a dear friend, a relative, a lover, a devoted pet that we have, a country, a natural place, whatever the separation is, whatever pain and wailing that we're experiencing, within that, our experience is the call of the ney, the call of unity, the attraction of our beloved to our consciousness. So my secret is not far from my plaint, my wailing cry, but ear and eye lack the light, they lack the light whereby it should be apprehended. So our ears and our eyes, which are designed to be aware of the differences of forms, our eyes see different colors, our eyes see different shapes, our ears see different sounds, our eyes and ears are designed to enable us to be aware of separate forms, separate things that are created in the world. So even though our ordinary senses are not designed to see the light at the core that is the secret within the call of the Ney, even though our ears and eyes are not designed to pick up the core that underlies all of the different pains that we experience, nevertheless, that secret, that mystery, that call is there beneath the surface of all of our separations and all of our wounds. Any questions so far? So just to repeat that line, Sirriman aznaleye man dur nist li cheshmo gush ra on nur nist.
Anybody has any questions, feel free to raise your hand or to put it into chat once again. *9 if you're on the phone. Looks like we do have a caller with a question. I don't know their name, but it's 650-458-6228. I'm going to unmute you now. You can go ahead.
Thank you so much for this call, and I joined late, but I do have a question. I just really appreciate the transmission, and you mentioned separation. Is that what I heard? Is the cause of our suffering? Is that, I believe I heard that.
Yes.
And the question is, I guess as individuals, we are separate, but then we are part of the collective. And so, you know, and in some ways, being part of the collective can cause suffering if our individual needs aren't met. Am I going off tangent? Is this not relevant? I'm just...
No, this is very relevant.
Okay, thank you. So I guess I wanted to hear your opinion about, you know, maybe my diversion of thought. So if it's not relevant, then I'm okay with going on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, whatever the cause of our pain, whether it's separation from having not achieved some kind of a goal, or whether we're aware that our fellow citizens are suffering, or whether you've had a relationship that has broken up, or a dear friend or loved one who has died, whatever the cause, that has a degree of the separation that's involved in that can lead us back to the separation that is our separation from the unity of God. And so at the root, the Sufi understanding is that at the root of all of our the discomforts and pains that we experience, the yearnings and the separations that we experience, at the root of that is our separation, the pain of our separation from God. And this is why the more we heal that, the more we heal our separation from God, then we're better able to cope with our other separations. Because we're putting less weight, so to speak, on the other separations, which doesn't diminish them. It just it makes it easier to actually go about dealing with them. So the other separation, all the separations that we have experienced in our lives and continue to experience, whether it's personal or whether we're experiencing the collective pain that you're referring to, all of those can lead us back to the healing of our separation and our wounds, that is the separation, the wound of our separation from our beloved, from the infinite, from this oceanic reality of the sea of divine love. So some people make the mistake of thinking that, well, since at the root of all of our separations is a separation from the divine, well, then you can just forget about all of your other relationships, and they're not important. They are important, in fact, and the example of Muhammad, certainly Rumi's example, shows that your relationships in the world are significant. And in fact, the more you heal your relationship with this root of your soul, the more you heal that relationship between you and your divine beloved, then that facilitates your conducting all of your other relationships in a wiser and more compassionate and loving way. So is that an answer to your question that is sufficient?
Yes, thank you so much.
All right. And what's your name?
Ms. Kabir Halima Nadaline.
Oh,
Salaam
I
alaikum.
Recognize your voice. Wa alaikum salam.
And then next, Halima had a question. Halima, I am going to unmute you now. Go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum, Abdul Haq. So wonderful to have you here.
Wa alaikum salam.
I am from that part where, but the ear and eye lack the light whereby it should be apprehended. To me, that sounds like the veils, that the veils are subtly covering, you know, part of it is by design, that we're not supposed to hear and see what we're supposed to, but it really reminds me of the veiling that prevents our eyes and ears from seeing when we do not understand.
Exactly. And so it's possible to, in fact, if you, to the degree that we respond to what we hear with our ears and see with our eyes, to the degree that we respond to that with gratitude to our all-encompassing beloved, to the degree we receive our perceptions with that the gratitude that our perceptions come to us from the one creator as gifts from the infinitely merciful that Allah refers to in Surah Ar-Rahman, to the degree we respond to every one of our, everything that we hear and everything that we see and smell and touch and taste as gifts from the beloved, as gifts from that light, then the veils drop away. But the problem is that in our ordinary perceptions, the messages that we get is that what I'm hearing comes from this singer, and what I'm seeing comes from that the particular qualities of whatever it is I'm seeing. So
rather than from the beloved.
Yes. But it's our, on the other hand, our heart and our soul, the nay, is telling us there's more than meets the eye. And we have that expression, there's more than meets the eye, there's more than meets the ear to what you're seeing and hearing. underneath the surface of this song is this ocean, this infinite ocean of mercy, out of which whatever it is you're hearing and seeing is coming. So what you're hearing and seeing is just the surface of this ocean. So you need to remember, the nay says, the soul says, you need to remember that beneath the surface of whatever it is you're seeing and hearing is this ocean of loving light. And when you do that, then your eyes open and your ears open.
Yeah, so it's like just focusing on the dots when the whole world is around you.
Yes. Alhamdulillah,
thank you.
Wonderful. And up next we have Rhoda. I am going to unmute you now. Go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Thank you very much. My heart is turning so much that I grasp a question and it leaves, and then grasp another question and it leaves. My mind is having a hard time. But anyway, this last piece that you said sounded to me like when Siri says, don't stop, don't stop, don't stop. And my question, one of my questions is, It sounded to me that the more we are able to dive into our pain, that in the midst of our pain, there is always a light, the light of Allah, and that diving deep into the pain is a bridge to bring us back to Allah. It's that's it. And I'm in a state now with your teaching, so I apologize for my mind is not. But I did have another question.
So if it comes to you, another question comes to you, write it down, and we can deal with it then. But I can answer. I can reply to something in what you said, which is that. Yes, when Siri says don't stop, in other words, every moment, even when it appears that our mind has obscured things and our mind is confused and we don't understand, or even when it appears that we're running away from the pain, at that moment, CD says, don't stop, is the call of the nay. Mm-hmm. The music that the nay is playing is that Rauda is running away. The music that the nay is playing is that Rauda's mind is having a hard time. That's still the music of the nay. So even though it sounds weird, it might sound weird, it doesn't sound particularly spiritual, when we're aware that we're running away from the pain or that our mind has interfered and is causing all kinds of confused or strange thoughts. But from the perspective of the reed, from the perspective of the nay, that's all part of the music. So Siri says, don't stop. Listen, even what appears to be a very confused and disjointed piece of modern, postmodern music, noise, even that noise is the song of the nay. Even that noise is the call of the beloved. So the ball is in our court to respond to it with gratitude. So if we follow CD's advice and say and decide not to stop, then we respond true even to the music of our confused mind, and we respond even to the music of our feeling like running away or awareness that we fell deep into some trap, we can respond to that as if it is the embrace of our beloved coming to us in a very loving, easy to handle way. So, yes, it's at any moment we have the choice to resume and to receive and to surrender into our beloved's embrace of us. At every moment we have the opportunity to listen to this music of our soul, the music of the nay, the deep flute.
So alhamdulillah is the key to...
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, as the Quran says, that people have their fingers in their ears. It's like at each moment, it's like everybody's walking around with their fingers in their ears. The nice thing is if we can take our fingers out of our ears.
Thank you very much.
Alhamdulillah.
And up next we have Mastura. Mastura, I'm going to unmute you now.
Alhamdulillah, thank you. Inshallah, I can pull my fingers out of my ears and have the headset in my ears. So I'm really drawn to this line, everyone became my friend from his own opinion. None sought out my secrets from within me. And as you were speaking to Kabira Halima, as you were responding to her question, I was hearing you say, you know, this is very much about the worldly relationships, the relationships we have in the world, in the dunya. And yet there's a part of me that is really drawn into this line and wants to go down a deep well with it. And I'm just wondering if you could say any more about it.
Yeah. To the degree, Rumi has another line toward the end that we're certainly not going to reach if we go line by line. So we'll skip ahead to line, let's see, the second page. It's line 30. Line 30. Okay. The beloved is all, and the lover is a veil. The beloved is living, and the lover is dead. جمله معشوق است و عاشق پرده‌ای. زنده معشوق است و عاشق مرده‌ای. All is the beloved, and the lover is a veil. The beloved is alive, and the lover is dead. So, when we get to that point, then we're no longer seeking from a point of view, from a perspective on the circumference. At any moment that we pass away from our own individuality, then we're no longer stuck, we're no longer listening to the nay from our own opinion, from our own perspective. So that's what's meant by opinion, their own opinion, is everyone is listening from their own perspective. So at any moment when we surrender and are when we gratefully surrender and pass away from our own individuality in fana, and the literal meaning of fana is passing away, when we pass away from that and surrender our separation, we are essentially following the hadith of Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, who says, die before you die. And so if at this moment we surrender in this love gratefully and pass away the lover, which was a veil, dies, so to speak, and all that's left is the beloved. And the nice thing is that if at this moment you happen to pass away in this fana and taste that union, don't worry. Almost everyone gets another shot at a reunion, because the next moment after a moment of fana, we then, because Allah wants us to experience the manifold dimensions of the many different kinds of union that we can experience. And this, these many different kinds of union are expressed in the different divine names. So Allah wants us to taste the union of every single one of the infinite names of Allah. And so consequently, even if, at this moment, if you pass away and die, so to speak, from your individuality, in most cases, Allah will bring us back to awareness and give us another chance for another kind of reunion, another taste of the union. And that's one of the most, I think it's probably one of the most beautiful things of the whole path of all existence, is that at each moment we have another opportunity to surrender into the embrace of our beloved's infinite being. And at the same time, we have another opportunity to discover another facet of existence, another facet of the hidden treasure that has come into manifestation, which we call our lives and our world. For example, these days in the United States, everybody knows that things are a bit rough. And the beauty of the path is, and in the world, think for a lot of people, things are a bit rough. All the wars, all the dictators, all the suffering that many people are experiencing. But at the same time, Allah gives us the option that even right now, when we're aware of all this suffering, that we have the option of passing away in this love and discovering the sea of Rahmah that encompasses everything, as the Quran tells us. Rahmati wasi'at kulli shay. My mercy encompasses everything. So we have this opportunity at each moment, no matter how bad things get, no matter how intense the separation, both personal and the pain that we experience in people who are not as well off as we are, we have the opportunity to take the union that underlies the suffering at the surface, that underlies the whatever Jalali or Qahri manifestation is occurring at the surface, whatever manifestation of Allah's severity and grandeur is occurring at the surface, we have the opportunity of tasting this underlying unity, of hearing the call of the nay and following it, following the call of the soul, the music of the soul, back to the divine orchestra, back to our all-encompassing beloved.
Alhamdulillah.
So sometimes you get a little bit more than you asked for.
No. Oh, that was beautiful. Beautiful. That was that totally quenched the thirst in my heart.
Alhamdulillah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, let's see. The next line is Tanzijano John Zatan. Mastur Nist, your name's in there, Mastura. Tanzijano John Zatan, Mastur Nist, Li Kesra Di Dijan Dastur Nist. He says, the body is not veiled from the soul, nor the soul from the body. Yet none is permitted to see the soul. So, there's an interpenetration of the body and the soul, and the soul and the body. But all we get is partial glimpses of the soul. We get manifestations of the soul. But to really know the soul, we have to go beyond separation. And it's in separation that we see. So this is why the none are permitted to see the soul, but we are permitted to pass away into the soul and pass away from the separation. It's possible to pass away from our individuality and our separation, and to so that this the flood of the ocean of the soul comes into our consciousness. And that's that flood, that's fana, but it's possible to also regain some sense of our individuality in baqa, in subsistence. So and then the next line, he says, this noise of the reed, this cry of the reed is fire. It's not wind. It's not just wind, and it's not just air. The cry of the reed is fire. It's not just wind. Whoever doesn't have this fire, may he be as if he's not existent. Nicholson says, may he be not. He says, Atishast in bangeneyo nist bod. It's a fire. Atishast in bangene. This cry, this noise of the reed. Atishast in bangeneyo nist bod. It's not just air. It's not just wind. Harkein atishnadarad nist bod. If somebody, he gets a little carried away here. He says, if somebody doesn't have this fire, he might as well not exist. What really makes us a human being is the degree we're in touch with this pain, to the degree we're in touch with this fire of yearning. Then he follows that back, he follows that up with, oh, Tisha Ishkas, it's the fire of love. It's the fire of love that has fallen into this reed, that is in this reed. It's the boiling of love, the fermentation of love. It's the fermentation and boiling of love that's in the wine. So this call of our soul, this yearning that we feel, if we listen, it's like a fire. It's like a fire that can burn up all of our concerns for this and that. It's like an intoxicating wine that can enable us to be filled with the love of the unity of God, the love of our beloved. And in the short run, occasionally you may get so drunk that you may temporarily lose touch with the difficulties that your fellow human beings are having. But if you keep going, then this intoxication that can come into your being, this love that can come into your being, will translate into compassion for whoever you're in relationship with. It will translate into compassion for your fellow human beings, for the natural environment, for animals, for all of creation. Because then you see, what is all of creation? We're all a part. We're all a manifestation of this frothing, churning ocean that is bursting into our consciousness at each moment, that we can taste at each moment. So, alhamdulillah. Any questions at this point?
Mastura, oh, and she raised her hand. I'm just going to go ahead and unmute you, Mastura. Go ahead.
Okay, let's talk for a while for a selfish question, but you mentioned that my name was in here, and I'm just wondering, the in the line, body is not veiled from soul, nor soul from body, yet none is permitted to see the soul. Can you tell me where that Mastur is?
Yes, Mastur is, one of the meanings of Mastur is veiled. And it can, Mastur, not in this poem, but in general, can be veiled in a kind of good way, or veiled in a, like veiled from God, or it can be like your faults. If you are Mastur, maybe God will not show every single fault of yours to other people, so you become humiliated, for example. Or God will veil your, if God veils you in a positive way, then maybe you have a negative thought, but that negative thought, you catch, Allah allows you to catch that negative thought so that it doesn't get translated into an action that might hurt yourself or someone else. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So here it's the body is not veiled. Tanzijan o janzatan mastur nist. It's not veiled. The word is veiled. He's translated as veiled.
Okay. Alhamdulillah. Thank you.
Alhamdulillah. Well, we have 3 minutes left, 2 minutes left now. Do we have any last minute questions?
And once again, it's *9 if you're on the phone. If you are joining the webcast, you select participants, and then at the bottom of the window that appears, you raise hand. And if you're having too much trouble, you can put it in chat, or you could just unmute yourself if you're having too much trouble with that.
So unless a question comes, I'll conclude with one more line. Nei harife harke az yari burid, pardahayash pardahaye ma darid. The reed is the comrade, the fellow traveler of everyone who has been parted from his friend or her friend. Its tunes, its strains has pierced our heart. Ne harife harke az yari burid, pardahayash pardahaye ma darid. Now, an interesting literary point there, he's giving us a pun on the word pardeh. What we translate as strains or tunes, one meaning is word pardeh, one meaning of the word pardeh. Then he says, pardahayash pardahaye ma darid. Another meaning of the word pardeh, which is the second usage in this line, is veil. So the nays, the reeds pardeh, tears apart our veils. Tears apart our parde. The reeds parde tears apart our parde. The reeds, in this case, tunes, its melodies, the reeds' melodies tears apart our veils. It enables us to, it wounds us. It opens up our heart, and that can enable us to follow that yearning back to our beloved. Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. So if anyone has any questions after this, you're certainly welcome to email them to Mastura or to me directly. You can friend me on Facebook. Email me on Facebook. I'm just Alan Godless, A-L-A-N-G-O-D-L-A-S. And thank you very much for listening in and your questions. And hopefully we'll do this again sometime.
Alhamdulillah, thank you so much for this. And I do see a request in the chat that
let's see
from Halima that said inshallah next week.
Okay, good.
And Nasiba looks like raised her hand, but maybe not in time. So
I could, if there's more time, we'd be happy to take another question. It's up to you.
She did raise her hand before 6:30 technically. So if you don't mind, I'd like to go ahead and call on her.
Sure. I'm still here.
Nasiba, you are now unmuted. You can ask your questions.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you very much for your beautiful seminar today. I really enjoyed of your reading poems in Farsi. And I have a question outside of these poems today about Sufism as you study Naqshbandiya. If you don't mind, can I ask?
Please.
What's the difference? I'm really from Bukhara city. I know the Sufism people, the fellows, they do practice. What's the difference in Kokand, in the Voli, in Uzbekistan? They pray to zikr very loud voice, men. I don't know about the woman, but in Bukhara, the people, all women and men, they do zikr or praise and read these Sufism poems, very silent, and they cover their face. And I want to know, I could not find, even I'm from Bukhara, I don't know why they do with the voice. And the, another part of Uzbekistan, they keep calm, like reading inside. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yaxshim, Mrs.
Rahmat, yaxshiman.
Biraz Uzbekçe gapıryam, Uzbekçe azgına gapırmam.
You have an excellent pronunciation in Uzbek.
Anyway, yes, so are you in Uzbekistan now, or are you?
No, I'm in the United States.
Oh, in what city?
Chicago, Buffalo Grove.
Oh, very good. All right, so there Sufis practice both vocal dhikr, jahri, zikr jahri, and silent zikr, zikr khafi. And generally, the Naqshbandiya practice silent dhikr, but sometimes they practice vocal dhikr. And commonly, it's when sheikhs feel that it's important for people to experience the intensity of vocal dhikr, they will do that. And I'll give you an example from the biography of probably the most important Uzbek Afghan sheikh of the late 18th and early 19th century, whose name was Sufi Islam Karrokhi. He, in his biography, his grandson who wrote the biography tells a story of a member of the royal court who came to his sheikh, who came to his grandfather, who was the sheikh, and said, "Oh sheikh, I have a paralysis in my leg, in one of my legs. It's paralyzed." The sheikh said, "You should go to the Sufis, go to the Khanqah, and do vocal dhikr with the Sufis, vocal zikr." And the man thanked the sheikh and went to the Khanqah. And a couple days later, he came back and said to the sheikh, and the grandson, the sheikh's grandson was there and heard this. The man said to the sheikh, "I'm healed. I don't have my paralysis anymore." And then he thanked the sheikh and he went away. And the sheikh then turned to his grandson, who he was now alone with, and said to his grandson, "Do you think that was a karamat?" Do you think that was a miracle? And his grandson said, I think so. And the sheikh said, no, it wasn't a karama. It wasn't a miracle. It was hikmat, because I knew that vocal dhikr heals that kind of paralysis. So the point is that, the main point that I was making is that even though in general the Naqshbandiya were known for preferring silent dhikr, in certain occasions they would do vocal dhikr. And this occurs for many different Sufi tariqas, not just the Naqshbandi, although the Naqshbandi was specifically known primarily for silent dhikr. And then there are various other situations that caused Sufism to be the way it is now in Uzbekistan. But the most significant influence on Sufism in contemporary Uzbekistan was the fact that during the Soviet period, the Soviets tried to eliminate Sufism. And consequently, the sheikhs they've been trying to revive it, especially since the end of the Soviet Union. And so things are very different. The Sufism in Uzbekistan is different in many ways than Sufism in the rest of the world, because there was so much pressure on Sufis and Muslims during the Soviet period. Sufism and Islam was almost annihilated, but fortunately it was not.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Alhamdulillah, that reminds me of when Sidi talks about the inner ecstasy and the outer sobriety.
Yes.
And sometimes the inner ecstasy becomes the outer, just in the outer, and sometimes it's held inside.
Yeah, sometimes we weep, sometimes we laugh, other times it's just a kind of slow, intoxicating burn.
Alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah.
Flying inside. And yes. This has been fabulous, and Abdul Haq, I will just put it out there. Okay. Thank you. I'll put it out there. I'll be in touch. There are a couple requests in here saying, please come back next week. Please come back next week. And what we've been doing in between is having a time of reflection and discussion about what was shared the week before, but I'm not going to put you on the spot here in public because I know you have a busy schedule, but I will be in touch with you to see if you are available to come back and possibly finish this next week.
Yeah, I think I don't have anything planned, so should be able to.
Yay! Oh, alhamdulillah. Okay. Well, that was easy. Well, then I'll definitely just be in touch about details on that, but same time, same channel. Alhamdulillah.
Unless I just, for some reason, I fly to Bukhara or someplace like that.
You're welcome.
I'm sure they have internet there. Not a problem.
It's been about 6 years or so since I've been in Bukhara. Yeah, and see, in Bukhara, this is where Bahauddin Naqshband's shrine is. And although I'm not sure if Rumi, on his journey from Afghanistan, went through Bukhara, it's possible that he may have stopped there on his way to Turkey when he was fleeing the Mongols, because certainly Bukhara was, and many of the other cities were in Central Asia, were ultimately decimated by the Mongols. So it's not totally off topic that we mention Rumi in the context, or mention Bukhara in the context of speaking about Rumi. Thank you so much, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Alhamdulillah. Okay, thank you so much. Thank you all for being here this evening. And Casey, do you have anything to discuss with people before we let them go?
Nothing major, just hop on Google Classroom if you guys feel like picking up a discussion there. And let me know if you need any technical assistance with anything.
All right, well, thank you all, and thank you, Dr. Godless. Wonderful to have you, and looking forward to next week.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.